1400 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And we've been doing lots and lots of research because of the New Year celebration.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to discuss the results of those of that research project. And we've been researching champagne bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
So later in the show, we'll talk all about champagne bubbles. And we're going to demonstrate, actually in the lab, using the Tech Talk laboratory equipment, champagne bubbles. And then we'll have to sample the champagne.
Okay.
I don't know whether that breaks any rules or not.
I think it does actually break rules.
But that's
you probably can, but I can.
Yes, okay. So we won't break any rules here. We won't let you break any rules.
No.
And
we can't do that.
And so today we're going to feature Dale Hetherington. He's the guy who invented the smart modem. Remember the Hayes smart modem? That was the original modem when everybody's first getting on the internet.
Oh, right.
Back in the old days, I had a Hayes smart modem, and he actually retired after making all of his money on smart modems. Has just been relaxing since 1984, mm-hmm. actually, and he's been having a nice time. I got a selfie stick this week too. This was another thing, and so we'll talk about the selfie stick. I mean, it's actually called a monopod, but it's truly a selfie stick. And, of course, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
I'm going to let you down there. There's a letter in your mailbox. I can't find
it
right now.
No, it's got to be
better. There's a letter in your mailbox.
All right, that's good. Yeah, is Mr. Big Boy still hungover from New Year's? Is that what's going on?
He's in Tampa or something like that.
I tell you, that is the problem with Mr. Big Voice. You know, once one holiday comes up,
I'll find him
and he's out for a week.
I'll find him.
Okay, listen. I think when we do the champagne section, he should say, "There are bubbles in your champagne."
It might be a little tough to do, but we'll work on that.
All right. We got an email from Feroz in Fredericksburg. "Dear Tech Talk, I purchased a GoPro Hero 3 Black." The black is sort of the upgraded, the top of the dog version. "Now, my son configured the camera. He set up the Wi-Fi network, set up the password, and then he left. And he can't really remember the password. Now, I'm trying to get my camera set up. I'm trying to hook up to the Wi-Fi network, but I don't know the settings, and I can't figure out how to reset it back to its default state so I can connect with Wi-Fi. I'm getting ready for a big vacation, and I need the GoPro. Thanks, Feroz in Fredericksburg." Well, for us, the GoPro Hero 3 Black is a nice little device. They've since come out with the Hero 4, and it's a very nice device. It can take, you know, of course, movies and stills. It's used by people who are in sports, skiers, snowboarders. They've even got underwater cases for scuba divers, which is kind of appealing to me. Now, the problem is, you cannot press a reset button to reset that GoPro camera. You've got to put into the micro SIM card a little script file, and then when the camera reboots, it reads the update script file, and then from the script file, it then resets the Wi-Fi password and Wi-Fi name. It's like the old autoexec files in the DOS machine. You would write all the configuration stuff in the file and it would read it. It's really old school, but it's what you've got. So this is how you can do it. It's actually it's actually programming language that's in there when it does this reconfiguration. And so if you don't want to write the little program that that reconfigures the Wi-Fi password. You can go to the GoPro support page. Just search GoPro support. Go to Hero 3. And it's going to say, I want to either install new firmware, install firmware plus Wi-Fi, or install Wi-Fi only. So in your case, since unless you want to upgrade with the latest firmware, you just install Wi-Fi only. And when you do that, it's going to create an update folder on your computer, on your desktop, and it's going to put a couple of files in that update folder. Then what you have to do, you've got to copy the update folder to the micro SIM card, which is inside of the GoPro. Now, here's another problem. The USB connector to the GoPro is not a data connector. It's just for power. So you can't plug your GoPro into your computer and copy it to the SIM card. No way, Jose. You've actually got to take the micro SIM out. You've got to put the micro SIM into a micro SIM reader and then plug it into your computer. And then you can copy the update folder that was created by the support website. Copy that update folder to the micro SIM. Then when you turn on your GoPro camera, it will read the update folder and bingo, you'll have your new Wi-Fi connection. So this is actually very convenient because if you've got the Wi-Fi connection, then you can see, you can use your iPhone, you can get a Wi-Fi connection between your iPhone and your GoPro, and you can see what your GoPro is looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is very convenient to be able to look at what the GoPro sees, because sometimes you'll have like a head-mounted GoPro. And you're looking around, you don't know what you're looking at, what the GoPro's seeing. But if you've got it linked to Wi-Fi, you can look at your iPhone, and then you can look and you can see what the GoPro sees. So it's actually a nice feature. You've got a nice little camera. I do like that unit. I don't like the way it's configured. If that were an Apple product, the configuration would be a lot simpler. I mean, you plug in your iPhone to the computer, it immediately reads all the data and everything. You can do all your configuration. And usually when you configure a Wi-Fi hotspot or something, you plug it in with a wire, and then you configure it over the wire. And then after it's configured, you can unplug the wire and connect to Wi-Fi. But they just don't have that set up. That was a good question. And it's hopefully in the future, GoPro is going to make that just a little simpler for the end users.
Now, before you move along to the next one, we have a make good.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Oh,
okay,
very good.
You feel
good.
Better now?
Okay, Mr. Big Voice, but listen, you will not get a glass of I know why he came in. He heard about
the
champagne.
He had to put his cigarette down and come
yeah,
in.
Yeah, okay. Now, Mr. Yeah. Big Voice, you're not going to get a glass of champagne
uh-huh.
now. Well, first of all, it's against station rules.
There's that.
And so we'll never, ever break a station rule.
No.
No way, Jose. Okay, we got an email from Took in Virginia Beach. Dear Tech Talk, I have an old computer, and it died on me. I have some pictures that I'd love to recover. What are my options for getting this data back? Love the show, Took in Virginia Beach. Well, extracting data from the hard drive of a dead computer isn't really all that hard, unless it's the hard drive itself that has the problem. Now, first of all, Took, what I would do, I'd go to your recent backup and just pull the data right off the backup. Oh,
wait a minute, there's no backup.
Oh, you said you had no backup. Oh, well, that's the problem then. Okay. So what you can do, you can try to boot your machine in the safe mode. Sometimes it just won't boot up in the full mode. So you can hold down one of the function keys, and it will boot in the safe mode. And then if you can get it to boot in the safe mode, you want to run checkdisk/r, which means repair, and it'll scan the hard drive for surface errors that might cause the disk to become inaccessible. And then you could try to boot it after that. Now, if you can't boot it at all, or if check disk doesn't help, you can try SpinWrite. Now, SpinWrite is really a nice program. I've used SpinWrite to repair the media on hard drives. And so the nice thing about SpinWrite is that you can boot right off the SpinWrite disk, and it accesses your hard drive using assembly language, so it goes right to the hardware, and it can scan it, and it can look for bad spots, and it can move the data. It can actually, in many cases, recover them because it rewrites, and sometimes it'll recover a bad spot. SpinWrite is absolutely incredible for getting bad sectors, so I try that. Now, the nice thing is if you buy SpinWrite and it doesn't work, They have a money back. They have a money back guarantee. Now, the last thing you can do, since you simply want data, probably it's on the hard drive, even though it won't boot up. So you can put your hard drive. You can take remove it from the computer and put it into a USB container, external hard drive container. You can get one of those for like $25, $30. And a couple of things you have to do. There are two sizes of hard drives, a 3.5-inch diameter and a 5.25-inch diameter. More than likely, you're a 3.5-inch diameter because they haven't had 5.25s for a long, long time. But if it's really an old one, it could be 5.25. So you want to get a hard drive, an external hard drive box that fits that size. And then there are two kinds of electronic interfaces. You got the IDE interface, which is the old style. And the SATA interface, S-A-T-A, which is the new style. The SATA has just a single flat connector, whereas the IDE has two rows of pins, really two rows of pins on it. So you could actually look at the connector. Now, if you really are a little bit unsure about all that stuff, you could just take the hard drive out of your old machine, take it down to one of the big box stores, and show it to the guy down there, and he'll get a box for you. Then you simply plug your hard drive into your to another computer, and it looks like an external disk, and you can copy the pictures from that. Then the nice thing is, you can, once you get all the data off that disk, you could reformat it, and that would become an external hard drive. And you know what? You could use it to back up your data, so you don't have this same kind of problem again. Well, that was a good email, Tuk. Best of luck getting back your data. We got an email from Lynn in Ohio. Oh, this is Ohio crew keeps emailing us every week. Uh-huh. Well, this is party time, I think.
Uh-huh, I think you're right.
Dear Tech Talk, I've run out of memory on my iPhone.
Ruh-roh.
Okay, this is what happens. You start taking too many pictures, memory, gone. After installing iOS 8, I keep getting low memory notifications and cannot take any more pictures. What are my options, and how can I increase the memory? Thanks, Lynn in Ohio. Well, Lynn, many, many iPhone users are really unhappy after the iOS 8 upgrade, because what happened is the new iOS operating system, 8, takes a lot of memory. It's a memory hog. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people, after they did this upgrade, they're getting these low memory signals, and they got to delete stuff. And in fact, the people that are running the iPhone 4, the iPhone 4 is so sluggish after upgrading to the iOS 8 that people are just frustrated. And then you really can't go back to 7. So what you've got to do is, if you're running out of memory, you can get rid of your music library. What you do, you simply hook it to iTunes. You can just delete all the songs. And then when you, next time you hook it up to iTunes, make certain that you uncheck it so that it's not synced. Otherwise, it'll just copy them all back on there again. So you can delete the songs from your iPhone. They'll still be in your iTunes library on your computer. Now, you can also delete any pictures you want. Now, what I do is I copy all the, I plug my iPhone into my computer, then I copy all the pictures to my picture folder in my computer, and then once I've got them off the iPhone, I delete them from the iPhone.
Right.
And then all my pictures then are really backed up to the cloud. I use Carbonite, so I put them on my laptop, and then they back up to Carbonite. So I always have them two places. Anything that's critical must always be stored two places. Otherwise, you don't have a backup.
Right.
The second copy is called the backup. And so I always have a backup for things that I really don't want to lose, because at some point everything fails in some way. Now, after you have copied all your pictures, you can delete all the photos from them. You want to delete all your shared albums after you save the pictures, because shared albums take space. Also, when you delete a picture, it goes to a deleted folder. So it sits there, still taking up space. So you want to delete your deleted folder. And then you could probably get rid of all that. Now, you also can check your memory usage. You can go to Settings, General, Usage, Manage Storage. This will be all posted on the show outline. And then you can see which of your applications are big memory hogs. And a lot of these applications store lots of data. And so you might want to see which applications you could get rid of. Now, there is a program called Checker. It's an app. It's a free one from the App Store, and you can clean your memory, and it'll go down and it will clean any any memory which is used by apps, and it will get rid of any junk memory that could get rid of. So that's also a way to do it. But I can tell you, I got an iPhone 5. I got 16 gigabytes of memory, and after this iPhone 8 upgrade, I'm just constantly playing around trying to optimize my memory. I will never get another iPhone with 16 gigabytes of memory. I'll tell you, the next one I'm getting is going to be at least 64 gigabytes because it takes more and more and more memory.
I'm looking to see what I have. I know there's an update that I haven't done yet.
And there's really no way. And Apple does not let you upgrade the memory in the iPhone. They just want you to come back and buy another $600 iPhone. That's why there's this class action lawsuit against them. After the iPhone 6, there's this class action lawsuit, people saying that Apple misrepresented the amount of available memory and that there's really not enough for pictures, and so we'll see how that goes. But I can tell you one thing. In the future, I'll never get an iPhone with less than 64 gigabytes of memory because I'm just tired of fighting this battle. I think we love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. We'll answer you on the show, or else we may email you with a response directly.
That's right, and you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. It is Saturday morning in Washington, D.C., and we're on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2. Stand by, more of Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn by doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Okay.
He really wants the champagne.
He's really working
right
on that
there,
champagne. He
ready
is.
To go.
Well, I do have a plastic cup that I brought in for him in case he wants some. But
I think a dog bowl would work for him.
Okay, Jim, let me tell you. You and I have the very, very fancy crystal champagne flutes.
That I will not be able to use, but that's another story.
That's right. Which I had to smuggle out of the house.
Because
I'm not allowed to take, our really good china out. Then I brought the plastic cup for the rest of the crew who won't be able to use that either.
Yeah, you see, you'll be the only one having fun.
Right.
I'm touching controls, so I cannot.
That's right. Well, today we're going to feature Dale Hetherington.
Mm-hmm.
Dale Hetherington was born in 1948 in Orlando, Florida. Dale played in his dad's machine shop when he was growing up. His dad actually owned a machine shop, and it was next door to the house. And Dale would go there and play with all the machines, lathing. He was really he liked to build things mechanically. Then Dale's uncle showed him how to build a crystal radio at age 9. His grandfather showed him how to process film and make prints at age 11. So he was like kind of his whole family kind of like do-it-yourselfers. Now, he liked to build stuff. He built a wind-powered vehicle. I went to his blog. I saw a picture. He's like 10 years old. He's sitting on this like a little go-kart contraption with this giant sail behind it. I really don't know whether it worked, but he was ready. He was waiting and ready to go.
Uh-huh.
He built small rockets. He built an acetylene oxygen balloon. Fireworks.
That sounds dangerous.
So he set this, you know, he sent this balloon up, which was an explosive gas mixture. Of course, it was lighter than air. And then he just set it off. So he just, you know, that's something that I would enjoy doing, I tell you. I used to fly all these hot air balloons. I used to fly natural gas balloons, you know, powered with my hot air balloons were powered with candles and Sterno and, you know. So he's actually Dale Hetherington is my kind of guy.
There you go.
He also, he built the low-power radio station. He built a low-power TV station. He built a flying spot scanner. He built a homemade stereo system. He built a video tape recorder, an automatic phone dialer, an audio tape recorder. I mean, he was just making all kinds of stuff. This was back in the old good old days when tinkering was fun. Now, Dale, his dad has great hopes for Dale. He said, Dale, I'm sending you to the Florida Institute of Technology. You know, they lived in Orlando, so mm-hmm. Florida Institute was close. So he said, Dale, I've got great hopes. You've been tinkering. You're going to just really do well. So he went to FIT, and he flunked out after one semester.
Oops.
With a grade point average of 0.25.
Oops.
Okay, here's the deal. I went to his blog, and it showed his dorm room at Florida Institute of Technology. And in the middle of his dorm room was the engine of his 57 Chevy. So he was overhauling the engine of his Chevy in his dorm room. And he said, you know, Dad, I've worked so hard overhauling that engine. I just didn't have time to study. So he did get his 57 Chevy working so he could drive home after flunking out.
Uh-huh.
Now, then his dad sent him to Southern Methodist University, which is in Dallas, SMU. Okay. Guess what?
The car stayed home.
So he didn't have a 57 Chevy, so he had no transportation. So he couldn't build a car. So what he did, he decided that SMU needed an AM student radio station. So he built an AM radio station with a transmitter and a console by scavenging parts from the school trash.
Good grief.
He had no money. So he set up this whole electronics operation in his room. See, his dad thought that, well, he's going to study now that he doesn't have his Chevy to work
on.
Wrong. Actually, now he's working on his building this AM radio station. And then he did something else. See, back in the old days, they didn't have in-room phones. So he ran wire throughout the whole dorm, and he created a room-to-room intercom system that you could call different rooms. He called it the sponge line. And so he ran his own intercom system in the dorm, which, of course, he managed right out of his room. I guess, you know, I don't know if he charged for the sponge line or not, but this is what he was doing. Okay, here's the good news. He managed to scrape through SMU with a C average.
All right.
So he graduated. And after that, you know, I think his dad probably popped out the champagne. Probably had. I hope they had good champagne glasses.
I would hope so, too.
When he graduated. And then he got a job after a graduate from SMU at Norman's Electronics. I mean, that kind of makes sense. And he started repairing components. They got pictures of his blog showing him sitting in there repairing all sorts of, like, you know, audio amplifiers and that sort of thing at this Norman Electronics. He worked there for several years, and then he was hired by a national data corporation to design custom electronic devices. And while he was at National Data Corp, he met a fellow employee at NDC called Dennis C. Hayes, and everything changed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Dale and Dennis pooled their funds, and they bought a computer kit, an MC880 chip, and they put together the computer. And then after they got it working, they said, you know, we want to hook this up to, you know, the phone line, you know, dial around. So they built a modem for it. And now Dale just loved electronics, so he was like the electronic design buff. And it turned out Dennis was a business and marketing guy. So sort of like Wozniak and Jobs. You know, Wozniak was the electronics guy that built the first Apple machine, and Steve Jobs sold it. So we had Dennis and Dale. They were the tech. And so they founded a company in 1977, which they called the D.C. Hayes Associates, which obviously named after Dennis because he was the businessman. And that later became Hayes Microcomputer Products. Now, initially, they built little modem kits, And they would, and they hired a couple of assemblers, and these assemblers would assemble these modem kits on Dennis's dining room table, and then they would ship them from Dennis's house. And at night, they were still working, but they're at they were still working there at National Data Corporation. So they would finish a few modems each day, and then at night, Dale would take them back to work, and he would use all the test equipment to work to test the modems to see if they'd worked, and if they passed all the tests, they'd ship them out. So that's how they got the thing started. And they initially built internal modems. And an internal modem, you see, an internal modem connects directly to the bus inside of the computer. So you've got a lot of, you've got the ability to have a lot of control signals. And so they built internal modems connected to the bus. In fact, they built the micro modem too for the Apple II machine. So they actually built the modem that went inside of the Apple II machine back then, and they delivered it to Apple. But you see, internal modems were commercially impractical because every single computer had a different design and a different bus. And so, you know, all these different machines were coming out, although there were no standards, and they'd have to design a different modem for a different computer. It wasn't very good. They wanted one modem that worked for everything. That was the idea. And so they thought it would make better sense because actually a modem, which, you know, basically connects to a phone line and it sends data over a phone line, is basically a serial device, you know, just two wires connected to the phone line. So it's a serial device. So it's obvious that why not use the serial port that comes out? Almost every computer had a serial port. That would be, you know, an RS-232 port. So they said, why not hook it to the serial port? Now, here's the problem. Okay, so they hooked the computer to the serial port. I'm going to explain a little technical issue here. Is that
just
kind of a sidebar? So when the modem is operating, it's sending data. Now, but when you set up the phone call and tell it to dial it, you're basically in a control mode where you're trying to tell it, okay, set up the connection. Once the connection's set up, it made the phone call, the connection's made, and then it goes to data mode. But then while you're in the data mode and if you want to hang up the phone line, you've got to go back to the control mode and say, okay, now you're in the control mode, so hang up the phone line. So you had to have two modes, a data mode and a control mode. And so Dale Hetherington, you know, he grappled with this. See, you could actually not have a data mode and a control mode if you had an extra pin. So you could have a control pin that would tell it when to dial and when to hang up. But the trouble with the RS-232 serial ports is that the configuration, the pinout structure wasn't standardized. I mean, the plug was standardized, but all the computers would pin out in a different way. All they knew is that you always had the data pins. The other pins, they didn't know what was available. So they decided in order to make this so that it work on any computer, they would only use the data pins. And that meant they had to be able to switch between control mode and data mode with only the data pins. So Dale Hetherington got this idea. Why don't we send a rarely used sequence of characters? And so he decided to send three plus signs. So you send three plus signs, and that tells the modem, hey, three plus signs, this isn't data. I want you to switch modes. So if you're in the data mode, you switch to the control mode. If you're in the control mode, you switch to the data mode. So they'd sent three plus signs, you'd get it there. Well, I guess it would be possible to actually send three plus signs. Like suppose you were sending the instruction manual for the Hayes modem. It would have three plus signs in it. So what he did, he said it's three plus signs that are preceded by a 1 second pause, and on both sides. It's isolated. There's a buffer around it, a 1 second buffer on either side. And so with that 1 second buffer on either side of the three pluses, they had something that worked reliably. Now, the second thing that he wanted to do is that, see, back then we had two basic speeds, 300 baud, 300 bits per second, or 1,200 baud, 1,200 bits per second. And so they didn't want to have to configure the modem for what the bit rate of the computer was, so they wanted it to detect it. Well, in order to detect it, they had to look at a command first and then evaluate it to see what it was. And so in order to give a chance for detection, he preceded all the commands with an AT symbol, which stood for attention. So it would look for AT and would look at the at the speed that AT was sent to it, and it would determine what the transmission speed was because it had this preceding AT thing. And then when the actual command came in, it was all tuned up and ready to go. So this particular smart modem, it was smart in that you just plug it into the computer and it controls the phone line automatically. It detects the speed automatically. It was just great. Now, when they came out with the smart modem, there really wasn't a big market for modems at the time. I mean, you know, this was like we had the homebrew computer stuff. But around that time, there was this software called this BBS software, bulletin software. And there were a lot of guys that wanted to set up bulletin boards, and they needed to connect to connect to them using phone lines. And so they had bulletin boards that you would dial into, and they all needed modems. So because of the bulletin board market, the number of smart modems sold just exploded. I mean, I had a Hayes smart modem. It had an aluminum extruded aluminum case. It was very nicely done. And I used it a long time. And so these guys just thought they owned the market. Well, this was a privately held company. Started in 1984. In 1977. Then around 1984, Dale, who was kind of the technical guy, he looked ahead. He says, you know, I'm thinking we're not going to be able to make it too much longer because you know, there's going to be a lot of competition here. So he decided to cash in his privately held stock. So he had a deal. He went back to Dennis. He says, okay, Dennis, I'm leaving. I'm going to cash out my stock. And Dennis didn't have enough money, so they got a 10-year payout plan where he was going to get paid back for all of his stock over a 10-year period. So he cashed out in 1984. Fully paid out in 1994. And so what happened was, just as Dale thought, in 1991, Rockwell came out with a chipset for the V.32 BIS chipset. And this ran at 14.4 baud, 14.4 kilobits per second, 14.4 baud. And that came out in 1991. And I'm telling you, when that came out, their market share just dropped to nothing. So they immediately tried to pivot. They started to make their own chips, try to compete at the 14.4 market, and then they tried to compete, but it was like catch-up. Then they decided, well, you know, maybe the modem market's not going to be anywhere, so they decided to switch to ISDN, try mm-hmm. to do that. But the ISDN modem market never took off in the U.S., although it did take off in Europe. So by 1999, Hayes went bankrupt.
Wow.
But Dale Hetherington got his payout completed by 1994, so he was sitting pretty. So he just stayed home, tinkered with technology in his personal lab and his small machine shop, just enjoying himself. He lives near Roswell, Georgia, with his wife and their cats.
Pretty funny.
So there you go, Dale Hetherington, the man who invented the smart modem and came up with the space plus 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 space signal to shift modes in the modem.
Pretty neat. Hope you're paying attention, because you can take that information and turn it into free food. Coming up here on the pop quiz on Tech Talk Radio, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. Stand by. We'll be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back to Classroom of the Airways, sometimes known as Tech Talk Radio.
Right.
Now, of course, if there's a classroom, we must assess your knowledge using the Pop Quiz. If you get the right answer to the pop quiz, you'll get an A for today's session, and you'll also win two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room or the Karam Dining Room. Earlier in the show, I was talking about Dale Hetherington. He, of course, is the man who developed the smart modem, the Hayes smart modem. But it was a long, hard grind till he reached that pinnacle of success. And one of his first big failures was at the Florida Institute of Technology. Why did he flunk out of FIT, and what was he doing instead of studying?
If you know the answer to that question, you need to call us right now. And the way to do that is pick up your phone and dial the following 10 digits in the proper order. If you're calling from west of Orlando, Florida, it's 877-936-9333. If you're calling from east of Roswell, Georgia, it's 877-936-9333. Everybody else can reach us on the wildcard line, 877-936-9333, or I'm assuming you have another idea.
I do. If you're calling from Kazakhstan, you can reach us using Skype. Simply connect to Tech Talk Radio 1, and that will be forwarded to the studio free of charge in a fully encrypted end-to-end method.
Excellent. Okay, so.
All right, so let's talk about this selfie stick that I got.
Uh-huh.
It's actually called the Universal Smartphone Monopod, and I got one from camkix.com, C-A-M-K-I-X.com. So I got it. It folds down to 11 inches, goes out to 40 inches. So before the show, we were taking, of course, what do you do if you're on a radio show? You take selfies in the studio.
Why were we taking
selfies in the studio. And the problem with this particular selfie stick is that I can't really click the camera once I'm at the end of the selfie stick. So they've got this 10-minute delayed shutter, so I did a 10-second delay. So I put the 10-second delay on with the iPhone. And I took the and I put it up there, and it took, you know, it counts down to 10 and takes a picture. And if you put it so the flash is at you, the flash will go off 10 times before it takes the picture. If you turn it around, you'll see the screen counting down. Now, the problem is that, you know, it's just a drag to always have to turn it and wait, because when you do this 10-second delay, you get a burst of 10 pictures. I would much rather be able to control the shutter directly. So I got this little monopod or this little selfie stick for about $10. And then while I was sitting here, then I noticed on the box that I could get a remote control version. And sure enough, I went on and I can get a remote control version that actually has a Bluetooth remote control button. And this thing only costs $29. And so I just activate the camera. There's probably an application.
Mm-hmm.
Then I just have a button and I can push it down and I can activate the Bluetooth. Because then if I'm in India and I go to the Taj Mahal,
right,
and I want to take a picture of me standing in front of the Taj Mahal, and I don't want to ask somebody to take my picture, I've got the selfie stick.
There you go.
I'm ready to go. So there you go. But there you go. It's the and I did take a couple of selfies here in the studio. Maybe I'll post one of those to the Tech Talk webpage.
Now, the problem with this is that in order to see what you're lining up in the shot,
mm-hmm,
you have to have the camera facing toward you.
Yeah.
You have to, you know, have the reverse angle, but you lose the flash.
You lose the flash. And that's also a lower quality camera.
Right. Oh, it is.
It's a lower quality camera. So
yeah.
So what you have to do is you basically just have to be very good at pointing it and hoping that you can get it. So there
uh-huh.
you go. So you can get the selfie stick. I may have to give this selfie stick without the Bluetooth control as a gift.
You may have to.
And then I'll buy the one with the Bluetooth shutter. And I'm hoping the person I give it to is not listening to Tech Talk today.
It's lucky that you have the original packaging that can go back.
I do. It's all ready to go. It's in gift. And it's not a re-gift, because I didn't receive it.
Okay.
You see, it's not, it's not exactly a re-gift.
No, it's not exactly a re-gift. All right. Let's go to line number two. This is Carol calling us from Silver Spring, Maryland. Carol, good morning. How are you?
Hi, Jim. I'm good. Thank you.
Good, good, good. Dr. Church, if you please
ask
the
question. Yes, early in the show, we're talking about Dale Hetherington.
Yeah, what's
his name? Dale Hetherington. I'm already on the champagne bubbles.
I know you are.
Dale Hetherington, he, of course, invented the smart modem. But what reason, what was he doing instead of studying when he was at FIT? Why did he flunk out?
He was working on his 57 Chevy engine in his dorm room.
That is correct.
Correct answer, Carol. Congratulations. You have won today. You're a first winner of 2015. Dr. Schertz, tell her what she's won, please.
Two tickets to fine dining, the Escoffier Dining Room, the Karim Dining Room. Just stay on the line and give us your contact information. We'll get those out to you next week.
Carol, thank you so much for listening. Thanks for playing the pop quiz. Stand by just a second. I'm going to turn you over to Andrew Mitchell, our adjunct professor for keeping us above board here on Tech Talk Radio, which, of course, you're listening to on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, and 107.7 FM HD2. Stand by. When I turn the music down, you'll hear commercials, and then we'll be right back here on Tech Talk Radio. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Now we're in the Tech Talk laboratory here.
Yes, we are.
Let me see. I've got to get my earphones over here.
Yeah, okay. You'd have to see that, and they will actually reach, will they not?
Oh, yeah, they're going to reach here. This is a... Okay, now what we're doing here, this is the Tech Talk, this is the Tech Talk, I got to stay on the mic over here.
Yeah, you
this
do have
is,
to stay on the mic. That would be, see, is, as it's not television.
I'm not a radio professional as you are. So now
no,
what we're
going
to
do. No, but you're a champagne
do,
professional,
so,
and that's good.
So here's the thing on champagne bubbles.
What are you doing? Oh, you need the exact instructions.
Yes. Oh,
here.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about the physics. This is actually a physics lab experiment about the physics of champagne
bubbles.
Okay,
that's what this is.
Yeah. Now, a team of scientists at the University of Reims revealed the secrets behind the bubbles in champagne. Now, you see, first of all, Jim,
yes,
a single bottle of champagne contains 10 million bubbles.
Really?
Now, this is just something, it's hard to imagine.
But you can't see them.
No, you can't see them. You know why you can't see them?
Why can't you see them?
Because when they push the CO2 gas into the liquid, it reacts with the water molecules and turns into carbonic acid.
Ah.
So this is really wine with carbonic acid.
And it is inert when it's in the bottle? Is that the deal?
And so when it's carbonic, but when you shake it up, the carbonic acid is very unstable and it poofs into bubbles. So when all the carbonic acid converts to bubbles, you'll have 10 million bubbles. That's the deal.
Okay. I'm not counting them.
I know. You can't do that. Now, here's the thing. Where do the bubbles come from? You put them in a glass of champagne. They actually nucleate around imperfections.
Really?
So if you have a glass which has no imperfections, say you washed it in the dishwasher and it's been blown dry, and so there are really no imperfections, no dust in the glass. You pour the champagne in, it's not going to bubble because it doesn't nucleate.
Interesting.
It nucleates around imperfection. So if you get like a cheap glass with a lot of like bumps and all, it's going to nucleate just fine. So you take fine crystal. I have these two champagne glasses, this fine crystal that I smuggled out of the household.
Mm-hmm.
If I break these glasses,
you're
I'm toast.
In deep trouble.
Now, Jim, take a look at the bottom of that. You see there's a little ring at the bottom of this champagne glass, which is a sandblasted ring. So all the finest champagne glasses at the bottom of the glass have a sandblasted area from which the bubbles will emanate.
Okay, here we go.
Here we go. Now we're okay. And here now it is. You pour it in slowly so that you don't you don't want it to fizz out too much. Now you notice, Jim, we're getting bubbles that are coming up from the bottom of the glass. You see,
we are indeed.
See, these bubbles are coming up nicely. It's a nice arrangement of bubbles. This is a beautiful glass.
You've done nicely there, Doc.
Yeah, so they're...
So what makes them rise?
Well, because they're lighter than... It's lighter than gravity.
It's
because the bubble is actually lighter than the liquid. Mm-hmm. Then the gravity pulls the liquid down and pushes the bubbles up.
Interesting.
It's gravitational effect.
So how long will that continue?
Now, in outer space, the bubbles won't rise. Think about it. There's no gravity.
Wow.
So that's just another problem.
Mind blown.
Yeah, that's another problem.
Okay.
Now, there are two kinds. You see, you've got these flute glasses.
And it's still going.
It's still, of course, Jim. This is a wine glass. Look at this. This guy, and they're all coming from the bottom, you notice, not from the edges. Now, you know that you could have a wide glass, say like a brandy glass, or you could have this narrow flute. Now, why do you think champagne is in the narrow flute?
I don't know.
Okay, they did some research, and they found if it's in a wide glass, there's more surface at the top, and it turns out that you lose the CO2 bubble effect about 30% faster. So,
no kidding.
So if you want your champagne to bubble longer, you want it in a narrow glass.
Ah.
So the bubbly stays there bubbly longer, unless... In your case, I think you're probably such a fast drinker, it may not matter.
Yeah, that's me.
It may not matter. But if you're a slow drinker, you're going to want it in the flute. That's extremely important.
I just drink it right out of the bottle.
Now, there's also something about the size of the bubble.
Really?
See, people believe smaller bubbles mean more quality, higher quality. These are like... you know, bubble amateurs.
I'm guessing that's incorrect.
Well, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with the quality, but, you know, bubble amateurs think that...
That's a microphone there.
That's a microphone. Yeah. Listen, I'm going to try to keep the champagne off the mic.
Yeah, and okay. You haven't even started drinking,
yeah,
and you're knocking stuff around.
I can see we've got the general management coming around, looking through all
that's
the windows.
That's because they
here.
Want the champagne,
yeah.
That's why.
Yeah, see, they're not on the air, so they can drink the champagne.
That's right.
Is Mr. Big Voice allowed to drink the
Mr.
champagne?
Mr. Big Voice is in a program. He's not allowed to have any.
He's not allowed to drink. He's not allowed to have any.
No.
So what? It turns out the size of the champagne bubble depends on how much CO2 is in the champagne. So if you have less CO2, the bubbles that are produced are smaller. So they discovered that they would simply use less sugar in the second fermentation. So what they do when they make champagne, they make the initial white wine. And then they would add sugar, and typically they would add 24 milligrams of sugar, 24 grams of sugar per liter.
That's a lot of sugar.
24 grams of, and then they would add yeast. Then the yeast would eat the sugar, that's a fermentation process, and the byproduct of that reaction was CO2.
Mm-hmm.
So what they've done to get the finer champagnes, they cut the amount of sugar down for the second fermentation from 24 grams to 18 grams. And so with less sugar, they've got less CO2 and they've got fewer bubbles. So look at this. It's still going. We've got still bubbles coming in this little flute here. That's really nice. Now, it turns out that if you pour champagne in a plastic cup.
Okay.
Now, I brought in this plastic cup for Andrew. But he's not allowed to drink
he's
out
He's not
of it.
Either, so.
So now the thing is, now you notice this plastic cup. Plastic is actually tries to push away the water. It's hydrophobic. It pushes away the water. So what happens is the bubbles stick to the sides of the glass. You notice here?
Indeed, they do.
There's no bubbling.
They're bigger bubbles,
there's
too.
There's big bubbles, and these giant bubbles just stick to the side of the glass. It's not nearly as elegant as this fine champagne flute.
And the color of the champagne becomes more cloudy, and I'm sure it's just the effect of the plastic as opposed to a fine crystal glass like you would have at the Schertz compound.
Okay, now I've got the second thought. This is very good at a cocktail party. Okay, the first thought was there are 10 million bubbles in a bottle of champagne.
Okay.
Okay, the second thing that you really need to know is that the science of bubbles has a name. Blasiology. So what you do, you go to your next party drinking champagne, you say, well, I'm a blasiologist. Not a meteorologist.
And watch the girls run away.
I'm a blasiologist, and I just sit here and watch all of the champagne bubbles.
That was interesting. Now, we did this, I don't know, about maybe 7 years ago we talked about this originally. But you didn't know about the roughed up bottom of the glasses.
I
had something
no
you learned
idea.
Last night.
I had no idea about that. So there you go. Right there in the Tech Talk Lab, all you need to know about champagne bubbles.
Amazing. And I wish I had appropriate music to get us out of here, but I don't. So that's me. Fascinating. Champagne here on Tech Talk Radio. 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2. And the doc is now going to make the next 10 minutes of the show very interesting. Let's hope not. Here we go. More Tech Talk coming up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University.
Your
talking
voice is
technology.
Cracking.
Excuse me. Yes, I've been doing some further research over the break.
I've got my finger on the Uber number here to get you out of here.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. I care.
You know, the problem with New Year's, you know, so I really enjoyed New Year's. And, of course, the entire New Year's evening, I was doing blasiology.
You were? Were you wearing your smoking jacket? Did you have a hat?
I was in my
kind of walked around like Hugh Hefner. And
that's right. I was in my smoking jacket. I was the blasiologist.
What you said.
What was that?
Blasiology.
Blasiology.
Blaze with an L.
Blasiology. Yeah, I was in blasiology. I'm already losing it. Okay. Now.
Two sips.
And probably what was my biggest downfall New Year's Eve was that I could only celebrate New Year's Eve in one time zone. I mean,
you're a man of means. How come you couldn't figure this out?
I mean, here's the thing.
Out?
You know, one time, wouldn't it be nice? Like if you could actually be in every time zone around the world at midnight.
Yeah, okay.
Now, if you fly around the Earth at the equator, You got to be in a pretty fast flight, because that means you'd have to fly around the world in basically 24 hours. So if you could fly at the speed that the Earth was actually rotating,
so basically you could never get out of the airplane.
So the question is, you know, could you do this? But there is a way to do it, and never set foot in an airplane. This is what you do. Grab a bottle of champagne, get a heavy coat,
there you go.
Catch a flight to Edmondson Scott Station at the South Pole.
Because all of the time zones
go to a single point. And simply you just step about 10 feet from that thing, and you just walk in a circle around the pole, and you're in all the time zones of the world, and you just simply every hour walk out
10 feet
to a different time zone and become another blaziologist. And so you could actually drink,
well,
you know, 24
The champagne
24
would stay
times.
Cold, that's for sure. So the only other problem is you'd be lonely, because I don't think it's just you, polar bears, and penguins would be it.
Well, I don't. That's a research station, so I'd say there are guys down there, maybe guys and gals. I don't know what. Hello. I really don't know what's going on down there.
I think you might want to find out
before the research. Now, so that is one way to do that.
Now, I wonder if they do this. I wonder if they go. It's probably 400 degrees below zero.
Yeah, it's you know, I don't know. I think it might be hard to go out. Well, maybe what they could build
a ring room.
They could build an igloo around the pole, and they could stay inside and walk in
and
a circle.
And just walk in a circle, right?
Yeah,
a 10-foot igloo.
So I really think we're going to have to do a little research to see if they do that kind of activity.
I'll stay here and run the board.
Okay, that could be. Now, there are also several points on the planet where time zones meet, like in where Afghanistan. For instance, Afghanistan, Iran, and Pakistan meet at a point where three time zones converge on a single point.
I think
so
that
you could,
might
so
be
you
your
could,
last New Year's.
So you
if
could
you
drive
there.
Around that point at midnight, and you could be in three time zones just by walking around. Of course, you're in Afghanistan, Iran, and Pakistan. Could be a little dangerous.
It could be a little dangerous. Like I said, your last New Year's ever.
Now, if you're worried about a drone coming in and shooting your vehicle down there, because that I think that's drone territory. You could go off to Central Russia, and here you have 2 hours to cover only 1.5 miles from the Sakha Republic to the Krasnoyarsk Krai Republic. I can't even say it, and you can hit three time zones.
Mm-hmm.
So. Or else, I suppose you could get in a jet, and you could fly across the U.S. and maybe get three time zones, if you could fly, because you can.
Now that would be something an airline could do. It'd be a nice promotion.
But it takes 5 hours for an airline to fly. You'd have to do it in 3 hours. So you'd have to be in a an F-22 jet or something. Fly faster than a commercial air flight. Now,
could the Concorde have done that?
Yeah. Now they're. There is you can't see this path up here. I've got a map here.
So I'm going to hold that up to the microphone.
Yeah, hold that up because hold that up to the Home and Garden channels
here. It was oriented incorrectly.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you. That's excellent. Hold that up.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody asked the question: could I take off and land in all 6 continents and do it? And so they did this very complicated route.
Mm-hmm.
And so they calculated the shortest way to do this route, and there's one leg of it, you'd have to fly on F-22, and you'd have to have a midair refueling. but it would be possible to take off and land in every time zone and go through all 6 continents.
It would be
tough. That's assuming that we're putting Asia and Europe together in one continent. Because it used to be there were 7 continents.
Right.
So I'm saying 6 continents because Eurasia has now been combined in one. So it is possible to do that, but probably not practical.
No.
I'm thinking if you really want to do this thing, it's sort of the South Pole it is. So there you go. That's pretty much everything you wanted to know about New Year's. My God, what time is it? 50?
It's time to go bye-bye.
Listen, we love all your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. We'll see you next week.
Tuned in late. Want to hear the show again? 7 o'clock tomorrow right here. See you tomorrow. Next week.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio on the air at 1500. 1400 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Sports on the air later on today. NBA Wizards at 8:30. It is 36 outside at 10 a.m.